Welcome to Wild and Awake, an online retreat where you deepen your consciousness, arouse your courage, and choose with wisdom. We are exploring the question, how do I live my best life right now? I am your host, Kari Vantine.
Welcome everyone to Wild and Awake. Today we are so blessed to have with us Mark Anthony Lord. Welcome, Mark Anthony.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here. Truly. Thank you.
We're going to have a lot of fun today. We're actually going to some territories that are some of my favorite, and I'm excited and nervous about where we're heading. Yay.
It's a good combo.
Right. It's a good combo. Excited and nervous. That's sort of like wild and awake. We're here.
There you go.
I'd like to share a little bit about Mark Anthony, let you know who's sitting here with me today in this conversation. Mark Anthony Lord is an ordained New Thought minister, spiritual leader, and a spiritual relationship coach. Mark's passion for spiritual awakening led him to ordination as a minister, and he has gone on to found two successful spiritual communities, the Bodhi Spiritual Center in Chicago, which grew from a handful of members to thousands under his leadership, and Living the Course, a virtual Global Course in Miracles community. He's an author, having written The Seven Living Words, a metaphysical interpretation of the seven last words of Jesus, Thou Shalt Not Suffer, Seven Steps to the Life of Joy, and an upcoming release in 2023 called The Badass Prayer Book. Mark has touched the lives of countless individuals through his spiritual coaching, helping them heal broken relationships with God and spirit, themselves and others, allowing them to live more fulfilling and impactful lives. Mark Anthony, thank you so much for being here today.
Truly, I'm honored. Thank you for inviting me.
So where we're going to go is two territories that, as I said in the beginning, I'm excited and nervous. And I will say a little bit about my excited and nervous right at this point before we jump in, that we're going to be talking about forgiveness on one level, on multiple levels, because I think forgiveness is, you'll unpack it more later, but it's one of the places where I feel as a culture and a world where we get really stuck. And I think there's a lot of potential as we practice it individually, but even just to see where it can go. And the second place where we're going to be playing is in the conversation around God, spirit, the big U, universal consciousness, this concept of what is bigger out there in here that is supporting us, what to do when we've broken that relationship, how to create new ways of having that relationship, and probably a lot of different nuances. And those two territories are really exciting to me. And we've just spoken about Mark Anthony's background and why he's speaking about it. And I'm just going to take the briefest moment here to say that my background comes, many of you don't know me under this hat, but I grew up in an East-West home in which my father is an East-West comparative theologian. So I grew up in a house where there was just constant discussion around theology, and theology that's from the Eastern traditions and the Western worldwide. And from there, I traveled a lot and have constantly been curious about spirituality and what it is that makes people tick, like what's inside us that holds us together, especially when things get really, really hard. So our conversation today, more than a lot of the other conversations, is going to be one that's an inquiry. And so I'm asking everyone who's here today to be sitting in the space of bring your baggage. We're carrying our baggage. I get it. This is conversations a bit about baggage, and it's about what we do with it, how we work with it so that we can actually have more space, more support, more possibilities. Is there anything you want to add in there, Mark Anthony, before we jump in deep?
No, you said it so eloquently. You really painted the picture wonderfully.
Great. Thank you. So the place I want to start with you, Mark Anthony, is I know that your life began, or your path began in this work, not right at the beginning, like you grew into this work because of certain things that happened. And I think of it in some ways, Rumi and Hafiz, one of my favorite poems is the angels knocking on the door. And you had a definite experience in your life of angels knocking on your door. And I'd love it if you would be willing to share a piece of your past that really set you to be the person who's doing the work you are right now.
Yeah, it would be my honor. I was raised Catholic, and I'm a gay man. I was raised in a blue collar town where who I was and what I was completely not acceptable, made fun of, not taught. Fortunately, I had a family that never, ever, ever picked on me, and my parents never were abusive to me, but it also was just never talked about and recognized. And so the religion to me made me feel very shameful. And I was certain I was the one going to burn in hell. So the fact that I'm someone who talks about God today is as shocking to me as anybody else, because I wanted nothing to do with God, nothing to do with Jesus, nothing to do with religion. I threw it all out. And that was a good move. I mean, it served me well, because if my options were the broken ideas I was being fed or a little bit of freedom, I chose the little bit of freedom. But I had a lot of unhealed wounds from sexual abuse as a child. And so when I got into my 20s, the effect of all of that unhealed shame and pain and unhealed abuse started wreaking havoc on my life, in my relationships, and got into drugs. And I was like 24 when my parents put me into a private treatment center up in Northern Canada. And I had a phenomenal counselor there, an angel. I was in shock for the whole 30 days, I'm sure. But this one moment, I was doing a session with her. And when I was leaving her office, she said, "You need to hear this. You need to get a new God and learn how to forgive, or you're going to die." And it just pierced. Like literally, it was like the words that turned something inside of me. And I wanted nothing to do with either of those things. But that's why I say she was like an angel in my life, because she just pierced into my soul, and I heard it and I got it in an instant. And that really became my life. It just that moment, I heard her, I said yes to it, and I think probably multiple levels of my being, and the journey began. And what I discovered was so many people don't know what God is, and so many people are angry about it, that, you know, and people had no clue what forgiveness was. So she gave me quite a challenge, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I'm grateful to her too. And this person was a challenge that we could all hear that right now. And I think that's part of the invitation when you and I, you know, talked a week ago or so, kind of bouncing ideas around. I was excited about this particular thread. Like, what is it to actually, was her words, find a new God?
Get a new God.
Get a new God. Get a new God. That's a great bumper sticker. Get a new God, and learn how to forgive. And so that's part of what we're playing today. So in this idea of getting a new God, I'm curious for you, what did that look like?
Well, it unfolded over time for sure. But the first thing that I recognized, and I think many of us will agree upon this, is that the idea that I was force-fed and embodied because I didn't know anything else was, you know, the external white male punishing, scorekeeping, fickle, you know, man that lived up in the clouds somewhere and was watching my every move. And I needed to be perfect in order to get into this thing called heaven. But I knew I wasn't perfect. You know, I mean, it was just this horrible mix of, and really the primary thing was that first concept, God was external, and I was afraid. And when you approach anything in life from those two points of view, it definitely makes it very, very challenging. So as I realized that wasn't working, that was definitely the broken idea about it, it was through a series of different things that I just started discovering that this thing called God, through studying science of mind, through studying new thought teachings, of which I eventually became a minister, the whole experience of God, which is what I feel like I have today, I have an experience of God. And it's more like a fish swimming in the ocean. and God is the ocean that I'm within and all around me. And to me, in a way, it's kind of like if you said to a fish, look, you need to find water so that you can live. And so this fish is in the ocean going, I need water. I need water. Where do I find water? Like, it's crazy. But the fish doesn't know. It's so immersed in it. This is how it started changing for me. It was like, what if it's everything that I'm in that's so familiar to me that I wouldn't even call it that? What if it is the breath I breathe? What if it is the smell of the morning dew? What if it is the connection I feel with friends and with nature? And suddenly I started redefining it as this loving presence that was beating my heart and supporting me and within all of the connections of life. As I started to entertain that and make that a loving, friendly idea, I started opening up to a real personal relationship. And I felt like this presence is for me. It's within me. It is me. And so I developed over time what I call a twofold relationship with God. God as principle, God as impersonal, God as the laws of the universe that support every one of us, non-negotiable. And for me, God is personal. God is that loving presence that adores me, never judges, will never diminish or throw me out. Like, it just became this unconditional loving presence that I truly enjoy.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful evolution, especially when I think of the start with the the middle age or the older white man in the sky kind of piece. Yeah. And I just want to acknowledge that there are going to be people listening today who are probably of all different faiths. And I hope so. And so I'm holding that space in this conversation too, that we're talking about probably the Christian God. Primary Christian God would be the white man in the sky. And that there's for all faiths, there might also be things that you're wrestling with within your faith history and where you came from. So the invitation right now is to just sort of try and what part of what Mark Anthony's saying actually resonates in your own, architecture. And some people, I know I've worked with quite a lot of people who are what they might call recovering Catholics, who are, struggling there, but I've also worked with people who come from the Buddhist faith and are now trying to figure out actually what's it mean to have a different kind of relationship with a higher power. So I just want to lay that texture into the conversation too.
And I want to add to that truly, like, I don't think God cares whether you call it universe or presence or source or higher power. Like, the words there can be multiple words pointed to the same thing. What I have become passionate about, because I've worked with so many people who are in reaction, which really means that they're unhealed in relationship to the word God. And what I like to do is have a healing for your own self and then use whatever word you want. Mm. Like, the word is irrelevant, but the healing is relevant.
Thank you, Mark Anthony. And that could be an invitation for everybody today too, who's watching this, is that when this is over, or maybe during the course of this happens for you, is that there's actually a consciousness around healing with, we're going to do a practice a little later that has to do with forgiveness too. So that the healing, and also I believe there's forgiveness in there, that with whatever the old beliefs are, and this would be in our our holding of our faith, but it's also, I would say, with multiple areas of our life, this is going to resonate for you. So healing this piece so that something else is possible. As long as it's like stuck and unhealed and wounded, we're likely going to either be avoiding any sort of conversations that have to do with it, or not being able to hear things when something's being said and there's actually, gold hidden there in the mud.
Yes, that's so well said. You said that so well. I think I really just, we don't want words to get in the way. So what's important.
So that takes me to a place where I notice, and we're in this amazing melting pot time right now, where people are, no matter where you're theological backgrounds is, we're being influenced by yoga and by Reiki and by energy work and by, you know, crystals and statues and all sorts of things of different faiths and beliefs are integrating and being part of what we might think of as sort of a the new spiritual community. And I'm curious, and as I say that, that's me too. And but I also grew up that way with, you know, all sorts of icons and statues around because I've been fascinated with all the different beliefs. And this is coming more into the mainstream. I was just recently at a retreat that had, you know, statues that were Buddhist statues and statues that were, you know, all different faiths, and they were really gorgeous. And I don't know that anyone really knew or discerned that they were all, you know, holding different paths. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what is your take on that? That's happening in our culture right now. What do you think the gift of it is, and maybe what's the challenge of it?
I definitely think the gift of it is that these, you know, so many paradigms are collapsing. Most everything that we knew how it worked 20, 30 years ago is coming down. Religion, school systems, financial systems, medical systems, all of these systems are collapsing, and it's chaos. But it's positive because it means that the construct, the container, and the boxes that we were living in, when those walls come down, we get new opportunity. We get more efficient ways that work for us. And that absolutely includes spirituality, with so many people stepping away from religion, and me too, and rightfully so, because it didn't work for me. When we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, we have the opportunity to enjoy and explore. And I think bring back the mystical parts of that. To me, it's not new age, it's ancient, wonderful practices and tools that got judged very harshly by the religious powers that be at that time. And now they're coming back, and they're coming back in a beautiful way, because whether they be crystals or tarot cards or Reiki, energy work, all of this is spiritual, which is what we are. So any tool that genuinely helps us connect, helps us heal, helps us restore, helps us remember, those things are beautiful to me.
And you, I love this little dance that we have going on. Thank you. This is really fun. You brought up spiritual versus religious, and then I threw out the word theology. Could you unpack those three things from your perspective?
Sure. Theology. I think that is.
Go for the theology.
I mean, I might have some thoughts on it, but it's not my area of expertise, but definitely religion to me is man-made, and I emphasize man, which the man-made religion scrubbed out the feminine power. Had that not occurred, it could have been a very different experience. So religion to me, it does serve some people, so I never want to throw it completely under the bus, but it is very limited. Even if it serves someone for a time, if you're really on a spiritual path, most likely you're going to bump up at some point against the rules. Religion has dogma. Religion has rules. They say, if you act this way, then it's good. And it really operates in duality, and it operates in right, wrong, good, bad. And spirituality is a transcendent experience where it brings us into oneness, where it helps us face the divide within ourselves and create that so that we can return to oneness. Because my experience of spirituality and my experience of my God, my spirit, whatever word you want to use, it isn't divisible, and it is one power, and its nature is good, and its nature is beautiful. And I wouldn't have been able to find that through religion. I found that through spirituality.
Thank you. The beautiful definitions. I mean, I'll add to that. Theology, in my experience, is the study of the gods. And so theology is actually a wider span, and this would be more from a scientific or a historical perspective of all the major religions of the world, all the, you know, sub-religions, all the break-offs. I mean, we can talk about Christianity, and we're that's it, even on its own is a huge soup of subtleties and divisions. I spent a good deal of my life being raised Quaker, which is very, very different than being Christian, being Catholic, but we're still in that container of being called Christian. So I want to hold that nuance there. So we talk, you know, put that on the table. And I'd also go, you know, to the place of religion. I loved the way you were defining it with, you know, it's man-made and it's a container. And I'd also say it's ancient also. And to give it back some of its, I think some of the roots of where it came from, religio, and this is one of, you know, growing up with my father, he would define it this way. So I'll just say lig is a ligament, and it is like the thing that binds our bones and our sinews together. And re is again. So as in its old languaging, and which I believe we've lost, it was religion is the thing that binds us together when we've broken. Right? It's the thing that gives us away. And so, yes, it is in some ways, you know, it's something that was created to help us find our way and gets imbued. I think some of where it breaks down is getting imbued into the politics or power dynamics or all the under sources there. And I think that there are, you know, places where, and this is where we're in the inquiry, where it's actually really serving, the container is serving people really well. So I don't want to throw that out either. The right. Container is serving people really, really well. And our invitation, our curiosity today is not actually to, you know, throw anything, as you say, under the bus, but more say, and there's more. So if we look at the place where there's religion and then we take from it, as you were saying, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, the baby that comes out of religion that we're catching with the bathwater, what would we say that is, Mark Anthony? What are we catching? <That's> little baby. are we trying to save?
It's interesting. That's a great question. I think the baby that most people end up throwing out is a personal connection. Gosh, you could use terms like the Christ light. You could use terms like your identity, capital I. What we end up throwing out with the bathwater is our own kind of permission to live in the flow of our spirit. We throw out the opportunity to access the mystical gifts that are available. And religion does point there. And spirituality, I think, anchors us inside of there. So if we throw it out, we got to put a wall up, and then we put a wall up against ourselves.
That's a beautiful way of looking at it. So if we were right now, I'm going to just encourage everybody to feel that part that's resonating right now, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because we are holistic beings. And so we need all of us. When we're in our holistic self, that's when we feel alive, when we feel connected. And then we don't even need a word for it because we're just being it. But if we take a part out of fear or judgment and we throw it out, then we're not whole. So that's another way to think about it. We actually, the baby would be a part of ourselves that we throw out the window.
Right. And then in this place of spiritual, where we get to build something back up again, we can notice, and this is, you know, some of the curiosity is like, we've got a lot of tools out here that we can be bringing in. And I love what you were just saying about like the peace that's inside. So have you noticed, so it'd be interesting in your context of working with, the people that you're working with, because I know that you're actually supporting one of the bodies of work you do is supporting specifically women who are either on their way out of a relationship or in relationship and suffering, right? As this sort of context. Yes. And as you're encouraging or supporting, I'm guessing that one of the places you would need to go is to help them secure their relationship with spirit in some way. Is that so?
It is the first step.
It would have to be.
Mm-hmm. My program, because if we're not secure in our relationship with the divine, and from that secure relationship comes a relationship with ourselves, and then from there, we can have relationship with others. Most people have that flipped over. They don't have a secure connection with their spiritual being. Therefore, they don't have a good connection with themselves. So they're looking to fill the hole with other people. This is where the whole breakdown is. One of the things I help people learning when they get this, it's really empowering. People walk around trying to trust other people and love God. And I say, you've got that flipped around. Trust God, trust your spirit, build trust within your own being, and then love people. Love people when they fall, love people when they leave, love people when they're very imperfect on their path according to your perception. So we're trying to find things in our relationship that aren't meant to be there. They're meant to be within ourselves and with the divine. But because we weren't ever taught that, because the whole thing around relationship is upside down and it's experienced for most people, I help them get that right side up. And yes, the first step is, how is your relationship with your spirit? And I invite them to name it, whatever they want to name it, whatever name they use. We've got to reconnect there, because that's your fuel source. That's your power source. That's your life force.
Yeah.
And when you're connected to that and you build your faith in that, then what are the beliefs in that and the limitations and the ideas you've got about yourself that are not working and not going to create the relationship that you desire? And for women specifically, if I may, man, they put themselves last. They don't give themselves permission to have their yes or their no. There's so many ways that women, everyone, but because I work with women around relationship, I've just seen a lot where they literally give their power to the man, and then it becomes scary and insecure, and lots of pain follows anytime we give our power away.
Yeah.
Did I go in the right direction? I went on a tangent.
That's fine. Let's carry on with that one. And I'm going to just do a little bit of the container holding again, being that, because I work with women too, and I'm a woman. So I will say some women, and some of the time, this is what's happening. And I also want to bring in, although I think you probably usually work with women, perhaps who are in relationships with men, to bring in that women or female identified, maybe in relationship with any gender or any identification. So, and that's just to try to hold the container a little bit bigger for all of our listeners, because these dynamics go across relationship, but they do happen in a particular kind of dynamic, right? And the dynamic you're talking about is when we give up our power.
That really is a good way to say it. My programs are based on A Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. And in A Course in Miracles, they're very clear that they use the differentiation between special relationship and holy relationship. And special relationship is ego-based. You're the special one. You're more special than other people. And therefore, I've got to control you. You hold my, if you cheat on me, you're dead to me. You know, all of these rules and regulations that are so common that we don't even know to question them until we're in pain by them. But so many times when we come into relationship, you're coming with all your baggage and expectations, I'm coming with all of mine. And then it's this crazy thing where the love gets squeezed out. And it doesn't have to be that way. I really believe one of the new things coming onto the planet right now in consciousness is an evolution of relationship. I think the romantic relationship served a purpose for a parentheses of time, but we've overextended that. like the evolution of relationship from, your father being able to sell you for land, no emotional connection whatsoever, then swinging the pendulum to it's all of this emotion and all of this, it's got to be love and they have to be the only one and all those things that can also sometimes work. But for a lot of people, the ideal thing for relationship is that it leads us to our own hearts and it leads us to unconditional love. That's what they're for. And that's a journey of becoming.
And when you say this, as we're heading into this sort of new evolution of where love, yes, loving relationships can be, could you just say a little bit more about it? You just touched on it in that last bit. So you're seeing it going in this direction. This is beautiful.
I will, because I want to tell a very specific story.
Yes, please.
I know Byron Katie, perhaps many of you people have heard of Byron Katie, a truly awakened woman on our planet at the time, at this time. And I was at with her in Ojai, and it was about 15 of us, a very small group. And we were talking, and I said to her, she was talking about marrying her husband. And she said, her current husband. And she said, he asked her to marry him. And so she went and asked her children and her ex-husband and her family members, is there any reason why I should not marry him? No one could give her a reason why she shouldn't marry him. So she said, yes. And she told the story, and I go, Katie, if I asked you to marry me, I want you to marry me because you love me. And she literally was like, her head like turned. She's like, what? And she goes, love is what we are. That's the common denominator. We don't make our choices from there. That's not even the place. And that blew my mind. Mm. I was like, oh, she lives in true love is the common denominator. And when it is all that is, it's no longer a choosing place. Now you choose out of compatibility, you choose out of goals, you choose out of how you want to share a life, how you want to have a friendship. You choose for different reasons than I love you, which means you're special. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. And that's fascinating. And I really love Byron Katie's work. And I will just say she does the questions and the turnaround for those people who are trying to figure out who she is. She's pretty powerful. She asks us to ask questions about what's really happening. Is that really so, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. She's amazing. And seriously, she blew my mind because she really lives in all is love, mm-hmm. and it's all the same in the most beautiful way.
And that's not where she began. She began from a really hard place. So I just also put that into place that she grew where she is by asking. I think she might even call it the inquiry also, like by asking questions. And I hear what you're saying. That's incredible in terms of where she's holding, we're all love. And then we get to look at these other questions. As it used to be, it's sort of interesting because that's like taking the two parts of what's happened historically, where we would only ask the questions, is it compatible? Does this work out? Does mm-hmm. this work out income wise in terms of what our goals are versus, and then the love, and then we're kind of sandwiching the two. Yeah. I'm curious, because I think that most people are actually not in that vibration right now of being pure love. Right. So to actually be making the choice of a relationship with those kind of questions would be out of alignment for most people. And would that make sense? And so I'm curious how would we, like if I myself or you wanted to be asking those same questions with relationship, what would we need to do to get ourselves to a place where it feels like we need to get to a place where love was actually where we were coming from?
Well, yes. And I believe the new paradigm is, why are we going into relationship? Well, from the highest point of view, you can go into relationship for your own spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. You can go into it for the evolution of your own being, which means the person you attract becomes the best gift in your life, because the ways they piss you off, the ways that they cause you to feel upset, now they become the opportunities to see within yourself. That is what a holy relationship is about, where each person comes together to reveal their wholeness. Now, how do we get there? By first being broken, by first being willing to go, well, we magnetized each other from some other, like, you know, thinking that you're going to complete me. But then through that relationship, we flower open into our own completeness. And I do believe that is at the core of the vows of many people's relationships. But how to get there, how to evolve it, that you stop blaming, you stop attacking, you stop having, it is a high, holy way to move. Where that is my marriage now. It's like, no expectations. I don't know what tomorrow holds. I don't know what tomorrow holds, but I want for my partner happiness. When you want for them their joy, when you want for them their truth and their freedom, and you're in support of that versus feeling afraid that that's going to make them leave. So those are the changes that happen over time. So I don't mind that we come together and you end up in the special, because that's
the perfect. Special mess.
Yes, the special mess becomes the very place for the miraculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And part of that has to do with at least one of the people being in a place of saying, I'm in this for my growth.
Yes.
I'm in this
for people I work with, well, why do I have to be the one that does this? I'm like, well, you're the one who's awake enough in this moment to choose it for you and your partner. Mm. And let us not say that the partner isn't bringing some gift that they're working on either. You know, it's a coming together to reveal ourselves as whole. It's a beautiful thing, actually.
And you touched on the piece, and this threads us back to the beginning. I think this is where we bring it in, is the, in so many ways, what is keeping the mess in place is misunderstanding, expectations, painful past, projections, not letting something go. And a big piece of your work is around forgiveness. And I remember, that beginning, that incredible person who said to you, you need to get a new God and learn how to forgive. So this piece around forgiveness, how do we begin this process of forgiveness?
Yeah, it's my favorite conversation, because what I've discovered in my own seeking and now teaching on this for 20 years, people don't understand what it is. Yeah. They don't really understand how to do it. And they don't understand their part in the equation, which is simpler than we make it. Mm-hmm. But if I may, for a moment, share my conditioning, because I think people will relate to this. One of my stories I tell often is I was 9 and my brother was 10, and it was summertime. We got in some kind of fight, and my mom put us in the dining room. I remember she made us stand against the dining room wall. And she said, Chris, who's my brother, say you're sorry to Mark. And so Chris, like, I'm sorry. And then she's like, Mark, say, I forgive you. So I had to say to Chris, I forgive you. And then she reversed it. Mark, say you're sorry to Chris. I'm like, I'm sorry, Chris. Chris, say, I forgive you. He had to say, I forgive you. Now, there's 4 problems with that story. He wasn't sorry. I wasn't sorry. I didn't forgive him, and he didn't forgive me.
Yeah.
But we had to play the game so we didn't get in trouble and we could, go back outside. So this is our conditioning. It's like we're told to do something that we don't understand. We're told to do something we don't want to do. And then we're told like, but that's the way to become free. So it becomes really confusing. Mm-hmm. And that was my first relationship to forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But one of the key things I found out, and this is really vital, and I'll just teach from my point of view for a moment. What I discovered is I don't do forgiveness. The part of me that believes I'm hurt, the part that got hurt, the part that fell down in the hole, Einstein says, you can't solve the problem at the level of the problem. Well, that's why I need forgiveness, because I'm in some separated problem belief. And to return to a restored state of mind and grace, I need help. So what I've discovered is the first step in forgiveness is that we ask. We ask for forgiveness. I define forgiveness as a mystical something that is done to us that restores our mind and our spirit, so that we are back into alignment with our wholeness. Like, forgiveness is the reparative process. Mm-hmm. But it's mystical. I don't know how it's done, but I do know my part is to ask. So if I can give people anything, if you're in a relationship, an issue, an upset, a pain body that you just can't quite break free from, don't beat yourself up. And don't do the, oh, this should be done by now, or any of the that kind of thing against yourself. Mm-hmm. Just say, I asked the forgiveness set me free. That was my practice. Over is my mantra. I ask. Asking means opening. Asking means you're humble. Asking means you're welcoming something greater to have its way with you. And to me, that's what turned the key and opened the door to it.
Mm-hmm. That's so powerful. And this is where the first step of having a spiritual basis is important, because what you're asking is for something bigger. Or who are you asking?
Yeah, just a higher power. It can be your higher self. Mm-hmm. Within us all is a higher self, a self that is wise, a self that isn't hurt or harmed or injured from experience. You can call upon that. Another analogy, if I may, is if you're walking down the street and you fall down a hole that's 30 feet deep and you're suddenly at the bottom of a hole, you're not going to feel bad that you can't jump 30 feet. Who can? You're going to immediately ask for help. You're going to yell up for help. People walking by are going to hear you, and they're going to help you with a ladder or a rope and get you out of the hole. The last couple of months, I was driving down the highway. My tire blew and I pulled over the side of the road. It was like 11:30 at night. I immediately called and asked for help. I'm like, if I'm willing to ask, can you get help for a tire? Doesn't it make sense that I would ask for help for much more seemingly bigger, more complex things that I want support on? So to me, it's become very logical. And it's my first move to ask quickly and to ask for help in every area, because this thing that you're asking about, there is a power, call it love, call it spirit, call it divine, call it life. It is for you and it will work in your favor always. Always, that is non-negotiable. I don't care who argues with me. I am certain of that.
And would you actually, at this point, I'm just going to invite everybody, because I find that we learn best by actually having our own experiences on the table. So everybody who's watching, there's probably something that's resonating here because you're still listening. So that something, that place, let's just pull up. Actually, Mark Anthony, how would you lead us in this? What I'm hoping is you can actually lead us in a little practice where we experience your practice. And so my encouragement would be everybody pulls up something that you realize you're holding that you need, you'd like to.
Yeah. Let me see. I do a couple guided experiences, yeah. But I think I'll do just a simple one where I will bring you into your heart. We will activate the energy of forgiveness, and then I'll help you just kind of spread it through all aspects of your life. That way we don't even need to be specific. We can just do a practice for ourselves.
Great. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So shall we do that?
That would be wonderful. Please. So everybody.
Yeah. So
Settle down, turn your ringers off, be present.
Exactly. If you're available to join us in closing your eyes, and if you can't do it now, please come back to this when you can actually really be with no distractions. But we'll assume that we're all there right now as I invite you to close your eyes and connect with your breath, taking some nice, slow, deeper breaths than you've been taking up to this moment. And we've just thrown lots of concepts around. So take a moment to let your breath kind of release the questioning and the curiosity. Put it all aside as you just breathe yourself into your heart. And the way I like to do that is imagine a feather floating from your brain, drifting downward. Follow that feather as it passes your nose, floats down past your mouth, your jaw, floats down through your neck, past your collarbone, down right into the center of your chest. And if it's comfortable for you, take a hand or two and place it on your chest and breathe into the hand, feeling the rising and the falling of the chest. And just lower your hands when you're ready, keeping your attention in the center of your chest. Imagine a ball of golden light, and it begins to open up. And as you keep your attention upon it and breathe into it, it grows bigger and brighter. And the name of this ball of golden light is forgiveness. And so I'm going to invite you to begin putting these words into the center of this light. I ask that forgiveness set me free. Read those words in and repeat them. I ask that forgiveness set me free. And that activates this ball of golden light to grow brighter, and it fills your chest. I ask that forgiveness set me free. And it begins to expand through your whole body, your inner organs, up into your throat and down your arms, into your hands. I ask that forgiveness set me free, up and through your neck and your whole head, down your hips and down to your feet, until the whole body temple is filled with golden light. I ask that forgiveness set me free. And imagine that this golden light is swirling through all the cells, and it's kind of chewing up and detoxifying the stuck emotions, the fearful thoughts, the ways that the body is holding unforgiven thoughts and ideas I ask that forgiveness set me free. And imagine that this light is purifying, because that's what forgiveness does. Purifies and cleans the cells and cleans the organs and the muscles and the bones and the fluid, everything. I ask that forgiveness set me free. And let the body absorb this wonderful gift of forgiveness. And now imagine that this golden light extends beyond the edges of the body, creating like an egg-shaped golden light in which you are in the middle of. And this represents your emotional body, your mental body. I ask that forgiveness set me free. I ask that forgiveness purify my mind, releasing me from fearful thoughts and negative beliefs. I ask that forgiveness purify my emotional self, releasing me from held energy that was unexpressed, like anger or sadness or fear. I ask that forgiveness set me free. Just let it swirl all around you, outside and inside. Forgiveness purifies. It helps you remember what you are, which is this presence of light. And now one more. Imagine that this golden light begins to stream out of your heart, out into the world, as strings that connect every relationship in your life. And that string, it connects to their heart and it comes back to you. You don't even need to know individuals. Just imagine many, many people who you're in relationship with. I ask that forgiveness set me and everyone free. And here you are extending this light of forgiveness down the path of every single relationship. I ask that forgiveness set me and everyone free. And imagine everyone becoming lighter and brighter, and you're remembering who they are, which is innocent and whole and perfect and complete. That's what they are. And if they forgot, well, your forgiveness is the gift you give today. I ask that forgiveness set me and everyone free. Take a deep breath. And as you exhale, imagine all of the energy of these people and these golden cords come back into your heart. Love and only love. That's what you are. That's what they are. We breathe this in and we allow forgiveness to be done unto us. So it is. Open your eyes when you're ready.
Mark Anthony, thank you. That was really beautiful.
Yeah, now do that for 21 days. And let me tell you something, your whole energy, you'll just be like happy and easy, and you'll start attracting. Like that's the thing, is that when your vibration changes, then you change how you see the world and what you attract in the world.
You know, part of what I was experiencing as I was doing that, I had chosen a really specific place where I was doing my work, as I guessing everyone else here was. That experience of recognizing how attached I was to that hook, like there was a place where I was hooked to being right or being righteous, or something was done to me and it, you know, gave me the excuses for whatever else I did. And there's a place right there in the forgiveness where often I think of forgiveness as like I have to forgive another person for having done wrong, but I recognize in the forgiveness that it was also I had to let go of my attachment to the thing that then allowed me to be a little upset or a little, you know, have a whole field of energy. What are your thoughts around that?
I think you're right on it. Thank you for mentioning that, because one of the things that blocks forgiveness is this, I'm right. Or it's this idea, again, it's the old beliefs. Like, well, does this mean I'm a doormat? Or does this, like, or some people kind of like, well, I'll bestow forgiveness because I have pity on you because you're a broken person. Like, none of these things really equal true freedom. True freedom comes when we do let go of the story. We're willing to give up being right. Because, and we've all heard the saying, I think, do you want to be right or do you want to be free? That saying is powerful because we don't get both. And a lot of people want to be right. So you're right. It's a big surrender. Mm-hmm. But what I know is the more you practice letting go the need to be right, and you start to taste the gifts of freedom, you'll see the holes that are in wanting to be right. Being right, this is what I say to people. If you want to be right, make sure you want it more than anything, because it's all you get. You don't get friends, you don't get happiness, you don't get health, you don't get success, you don't get anything except you get to be right. Because I'm right shrinks you. I'm right disconnects you, and you can't be free. So close down, close down, close down. And that's what happens to people who are dedicated to being right. They shut down more and more. My mother is my greatest teacher in this, because my dad left her at 25 years of marriage for another woman, and she never got over it. She was so bitter and broken. And she is now in a nursing home with full-blown dementia. And her life just shrunk and shrunk, and her friends left, and she became more and more bitter as she wouldn't let go of being right. So I have a very good teacher my life that I'm like, nope, I want to do this differently.
Thank you. And I want to pull another subtlety where you mentioned something about being a doormat. The forgiveness is not necessarily the same as it's okay that, let's just say, you know, a story of, you know, a woman whose husband is abusive to her. It doesn't okay the abuse.
Right. And this is important too. Boy, you're really good. You're really good. Here's the
subtlety. I'm asking the questions everybody's wanting to know now.
But here's the subtlety that's everything. You see, from being hurt, we put boundaries up. I can't let this happen to me again. But when your boundary is coming from unforgiveness, when your boundary is coming from fear, then you're actually making yourself more magnetic for it happening again. When forgiveness cleans the story, when it sets you free from it, you will put a boundary down, but it will be from love. You'll put a boundary down out of self-love. You'll put a boundary down that actually cares for the other person too. Because that's the only way forgiveness works, is when everybody wins. That's why we need this higher power to do it for us. So you can set a boundary. I do set boundaries in my life, but I want them to come from love, not you're a piece of junk and I've got to keep you out of my life. Boy, that's the fast way to attract more junk.
Yes. So, thank you. Yeah. And that subtlety is important. So I want people to hear that forgiveness is not being complicit to something. That's not.
It's the opposite. It will make you powerful. It will put you first. It will give you the strength to say no and mean no. And that no will reverberate into the universe. It doesn't take your power away. It gives you power.
I love this. I love this conversation.
I had one more thing real quick.
Yes, please.
Because this is what I want to say to people. Forgiveness isn't a one-time deal. Do it over and over and over. And the analogy I use is, if I said to you, I went to the gym last month. I don't understand why my body isn't changing. Gyms don't work. You'd say to me, well, you went once last month? And I mean, that's crazy to you. Of course, you've got to be consistent. That's the same way with forgiveness. It's an ongoing practice. And the more you do it, the healthier you'll become inside of it.
That is actually really helpful. That's where you're encouraging. Let's practice. Let's practice this for the next, 20 days? 21 days. So 21, I know, is 21 days is sort of this magic number when things actually start shifting and when we build muscle and we own something. So 21 days of practicing this. That sounds fantastic. I'm in. I'll do it. 21 days. Yes. Yeah,
even if you just set your alarm for 3 minutes in the morning, you just ran the mantra, I ask that forgiveness set me free. I ask that forgiveness set me free. Do that for a couple minutes in the morning. And that is powerful.
So thinking about us in our daily life, one of the questions that's running under all of the work and all of the interviews, and has actually been the reason for choosing the people I'm interviewing, so it's kind of the glue that's holding us, is the question of what when you're looking at the people that you work with and all of us out here, what would be your recommendation of how it is that we can live our best life right now? And you just gave us some amazing tools. So I want everybody to just sort of breathe into that. But just, yeah, how would you hold that? How do we live our best life right now?
You know, one of my shifts that took some time, but I think is one of the most powerful ones, is I have really come to know and believe what, again, I think Einstein is the one who said this, that the universe is friendly. And that is, it's true at the most, you know, level of the being. It's also a decision.
We I think he says something like, the real difference is, do you think the universe is friendly or not friendly?
Right.
Like that's going to be the discerning thing about your experience of your life.
Yes. And because I have, I'm committed to the universe being friendly, and because I've made that decision that that's true, and I realign with that decision and I realign, when you believe the universe is friendly, everything is for me. And so now nothing is against me. Now I'm not a victim. Now it's an opportunity. No matter what comes my way, this is how I live my best life, because life is for me. So if a bill comes in, you know, that's thousands of dollars, all right, this is for me. Okay, universe, prove your abundance in my life, because I'm not paying this bill. I will be the channel for it. You know, so there's lots of ways. I mean, I'll pay the bill, but you get what I mean, that I welcome this universe to care for me, to guide me, to show up for my needs and my desires, because it's friendly and it loves me. That's how I live my best life. And the reason I like this is it doesn't, it includes everything that comes to me. No longer am I trying to live my best life just when good things happen, or you know what I mean? Like, we don't know.
That's the important thing. It's right there. As many of us are, we're getting a little older. Have you noticed that, Mark Anthony? We're getting a little older. The questions are a little different right now than when I was 20.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. So how do we live our best life right now? Well, we orient to the universe as a friendly place, a place where we are wanted and loved and cared for. That's beautiful. Yeah. Mark Anthony, this has been just a wonderful conversation with you today. Thank you for climbing on board with me and playing and being willing to play in territories that are delicate and powerful. And my hope is that everybody listening to this today has been stretched, had your consciousness, your thoughts, your opinions stretched. And also sometimes in stretching, it means that you get to look at your own and really see what you own and what you want to change up, and how, whether you want to choose something different, because we get choice in this.
Yeah. And I so bow to you and thank you, because you made it graceful and easy. I mean, like, it wasn't me, it was us kind of dancing together, and that was fun. I'll dance with you any day.
This was fun. Yes. This is the territory. My invitation to people is that, you know, these are conversations that we often don't have with each other because they're awkward. Or, you know, I remember as a kid being told, especially when we, you know, spent time with other family members, that we didn't discuss what were the rules, you know, no religion, no politics, and no sex, something like that. And I'm thinking, you know, we're really playing in the territory of relationships and religion here today, or spirituality. And so I appreciate that we brought to the table something that's a little tricky to talk about. My invitation to all of you is actually have these conversations in your real life with real people in your life. Experiment with what it's like to find the words, to find the place to invite a deeper embracing of what it is to be real with the people who are around you. Because I think that's part of how we actually build relationships that have a nuancing in it that's built, I would say that's built from love and safety.
Yeah. Beautifully said.
Mark Anthony, for people to find you, can you give us your website?
Yes. MarkAnthonyLord.me, which is different than .com, MarkAnthonyLord, MarkAnthonyLord at, am I saying that right? MarkAnthonyLord.me.
Got me. Great. And I love the gift that you're giving today is incredibly fitting for the conversation we had. You're giving a gift that's called Leave It at the Altar, a guided meditation for forgiveness. My invitation, especially for all of you today who were experiencing this part of the guided meditation, which was beautiful, to download this other piece, this bigger piece, to really be with the process in a more full sweep. And this is a beautiful way. I love, you know, and doing the kind of work you and I are doing, Mark Anthony, I think of it as dropping a pebble into a pond and watching the little ripples go out. So, like, thank you for the practice today. And then this gift, which my hope is that many of you will download this and actually listen to it and share it with the people around you to listen to, because this is how the ripples happen. This is how the pond moves further out. Yeah.
Mm. Thank you. So good.
Thank you, Mark Anthony. And thank you for everyone here on Wild and Awake. Aloha.